From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in West Menlo Park.
Haight-Ashbury.
I live in the Western Addition.
Bernal Heights.
San Bruno.
I live in Pacific Heights.
Coming up, we'll visit a new art installation by Chinese artist Ai Weiwei on the prison island of Alcatraz.
These pieces just fly in these spaces. They're just, well, I'll let you see for yourself.
Then we'll hear about the nun who isn't afraid to shake up the Catholic Church, all for social justice.
She walks into a congressional hearing that is filled with vitriol and ridiculousness, and all of a sudden, like, oh, there's a nun in the room.
And we'll continue our conversations with Oakland's mayoral candidates.
I mean, we are Oakland. We are always going to be a center of demonstration and protest.
That's all today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. The dissident activist Ai Weiwei has become something of a superstar in America for his provocative artwork and outspoken critique of Chinese policy and for his imprisonment by the Chinese government. But being under house arrest in Beijing hasn't stopped Ai from making work internationally. He just opened a massive and unprecedented installation called At Large on the former prison island of Alcatraz.
Our show is about freedom, ironically, and the human struggle for freedom of speech, for a better world, for a more civilized world, has always been restricted, also punished, damaged through history.
The new installation is comprised of a series of works set up in different parts of the prison, from the old prison laundry to a cell block once used for solitary confinement. In these spaces, Ai calls attention to the faces and voices of those who've been or currently are political prisoners. KALW's Sandhya Dirks visited the exhibit and brings us this story.
To get to Alcatraz, you must first board a boat that smoothly slips across the bay, offering up breathtaking views of the Golden Gate Bridge and the San Francisco skyline. The boat pulls into the dock, depositing visitors onto an island that is one of the most active ruins in the world. An abandoned guard tower stands at the entrance, with no one to watch the more than 1 million visitors that come each year to visit a prison. Outside a large industrial building that used to be the prison laundry stands Cheryl Haynes. She's the exhibit's curator. For the past 3 years, she's traveled back and forth from Beijing, helping bring Ai Weiwei's vision to life here.
These pieces just fly in these spaces. They're just, well, I'll let you see for yourself. I'm slightly biased, of course. Anyway, welcome to At Large, Ai Weiwei on Alcatraz.
Just inside the doors of the old laundry, we're greeted by the face of a giant paper dragon. Its multicolored body is made up of independent floating kites that snake through the cavernous space. On some of the kites are quotes from well-known dissidents, including one from Ai Weiwei himself. Every one of us is a potential convict. But the first words the visitor sees are from NSA leaker Edward Snowden. Privacy, his quote reads, is a function of liberty. In the next room, the floor is carpeted in a giant mosaic. 1.2 million Lego bricks joined together to form portraits of 176 political prisoners, from Martin Luther King Jr. to the Tibetan singer Lolo to American private Chelsea Manning, who leaked military documents to WikiLeaks. Alcatraz is federal land, which means, in essence, the government is sponsoring an exhibition that actively criticizes the U.S. It's not the first time Alcatraz has played host to political criticism, although that protest wasn't welcomed with open arms.
Why does it say welcome Indians at the front?
Well, that's a great question. So the question is, why did it say welcome Indians?
That's Howard Levitt with the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. He leads tours that introduce visitors to the lesser-known history of the island.
From 1969 to 1971, Alcatraz was occupied by a group of American Indians of multiple tribes, marked in many ways the beginning of the civil rights movement for Native Americans in this country.
There's a lot of hidden history here amongst the crumbling buildings and peeling paint.
Everyone knows that Alcatraz was a place of incarceration. What many people don't know is that throughout its history, there were political prisoners that were detained here, as well as criminals.
That's Greg Moore. He's the president of the Golden Gate National Park Conservancy. He brings up the case of 19 Hopi men who in the late 1800s were jailed on the Rock for refusing to send their children away to government-run schools. Moore says Alcatraz is the perfect place for Ai Weiwei's art, art that asks difficult questions.
What does it mean to be a threat to society? What is a political prisoner? Whose freedom of expression do we constrain and why?
In a psychiatric observation room in the prison's old hospital ward, Ai Weiwei has piped in Hopi Indian songs that echo off the walls of the 5-by-5-foot chamber. Ai also employs sound inside the main prison building to bring cold, closed cells back to life. Again, curator Cheryl Haynes.
Alcatraz, at one period in its history, was a silent prison, and prisoners were not allowed to speak to one another.
Each of the individual cells in this block contains a single stainless steel stool, welcoming visitors to come, sit, and listen. The voices of political prisoners, some well-known, others less so, echo from small embedded speakers in the cells. In one, Martin Luther King's Vietnam speech.
We still have a choice today. Nonviolent coexistence, a violent co-annihilation.
In another, Iranian poet Ahmed Shamlu. Further along, the Robben Island singers, who were jailed in a place known as the Alcatraz of South Africa, which housed anti-apartheid activists, including Nelson Mandela. And in the last cell, the political punk group Pussy Riot from Russia. Standing in the corridor, the voices mix together in the concrete and steel space. Haynes says these sounds, playing independently and in concert, are meant to lift the silence of incarceration. After all, she says imprisonment is an act of silencing, of cutting people off. It was like that for Ai Weiwei when he was incarcerated by Chinese authorities in 2011.
He felt like he was forgotten because there was no communication with the outside world. He didn't hear from his friends or his family or colleagues, and there was a sense of isolation attached to that.
And it's that feeling of isolation that leads to the show's final piece.
Right here, the card racks, that's the last part of the exhibit.
In the main hall, large racks are stacked with piles of postcards. Each is addressed to someone incarcerated somewhere in the world, currently jailed by their government, and recognized by Amnesty International as a political prisoner. Visitors are encouraged to write a message on a card and then drop them in the old mail bins. As the final act of this artwork, they will all be sent out, an attempt to communicate across distance, just as Ai Weiwei has done by bringing his art to Alcatraz, a message to not forget the missing. On Alcatraz Island, I'm Sandhya Dirks for Cross Currents.
The exhibit At Large, Ai Weiwei on Alcatraz, will be on display through April of 2015. To learn more and to see pictures of his artwork, go to kalw.org and click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Dissidence can be practiced against a state or other authority, like a church.
Well, the Vatican has reprimanded the largest group of Catholic nuns in the United States, accusing them of promoting radical feminist themes and challenging church teachings on homosexuality and male-only priesthood.
As head of the Catholic social justice group Network, Sister Simone Campbell, who's a nun, worked for immigration reform, health care, and economic justice. In 2010, when the Affordable Care Act was being debated in Congress, she wrote a letter in support of the bill and was able to get 60 signatures from religious orders in the U.S. on it. Who didn't sign on? the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops because of their stance on abortion and contraception. Since then, Sister Simone has been ostracized by the conference and labeled a radical nun. She recruited a number of fellow nuns and started going on bus tours around America to bring awareness to issues of health, immigration, and social justice. It's what Jesus would do, she says. Oakland filmmaker Melissa Reagan followed Sister Simone for a year for her new documentary called Nuns on the Bus. Reagan came by our studios to tell us about the phenomenon that is Sister Simone.
She is a unique human creature, I've come to understand. Like, she kind of has a superhero superpower in being a nun. You know, like, she can walk into a room. She walks into a congressional hearing that is filled with vitriol and ridiculousness, and all of a sudden, like, oh, there's a nun in the room. You know, so even the people who politically disagree with her are a little bit more on their good behavior. She was born and raised in L.A., and as a kid in the 60s was just really emotionally connected to what was happening with the civil rights movement. She was also raised in a Catholic household and went to summer camp run by the Sisters of Social Service, and there was exposed to kids of all different economic and racial and all sorts of different backgrounds, and really, I think, developed a sense of wanting to fight for equality for everyone and to do it with people who shared her values and the values that are grounded in the gospel.
And so what was the bus about? Where did they go? What did they do?
The bus was born of two main events. The first was the Vatican censoring the nuns. So all of a sudden there's all this media that, you know, everyone's like, oh my God, the Vatican just did this. What do the nuns think? And so Sister Simone was very present in the media and going on interview TV shows and talking a lot about nuns, and quickly realized she was tired of just talking about who are nuns. She's like, how do we use this moment of notoriety for mission? And her mission was really to help people in poverty. So at the same time, Paul Ryan's budget at the time had just passed the House. And Paul Ryan went on TV and said, as a Catholic, it's my Catholic social teaching that, you know, really tells me that this budget is the right approach. To which Simone basically said, oh, no, he didn't just say that, you know, and was just incensed that he was claiming Catholic social teaching as in support of that approach. So their first bus tour was really all about pushing back against Paul Ryan's budget. And then there were some really hard moments on the bus tour. There's one moment that I think we'll make it into the final cut of our film, because it was such a pivotal moment, I think, in Simone's experience of this, where on the immigration bus tour, a family who was facing deportation traveled 16, 18 hours in the car to catch up with her and the bus, thinking that she could help them. You know, they had seen her on the news and they thought, we're so desperate. We don't know what to do. Maybe Sister Simone can help us. And they showed up at an event and just sort of disrupted and shouted out, and here's what's going on with us. And, you know, this is so bad and please help us. And they're crying and they're exhausted. And she and then all of the people in the church just slowly circled around them and were just sort of laying hands on them. It was this impromptu, really touching moment. And I'm filming, and I'm like, I'm a one-person crew on this project, so I'm like holding a camera, I'm monitoring sound, my eyes are filled with tears, there's tears streaming down my face, I can't see, and it was just, there was so much emotion, so much heartbreak, and then for Simone afterwards in the bus was just in tears and realizing she feels helpless. Mm.
And she says, all I'm doing is Jesus's work.
Yeah.
This is what Christianity is to her, talking to people who are marginalized and people who are in poverty and people who are in need. Does she say, or does she feel that is being lost now as a focus of her church?
Yeah, well, and it's interesting what's happening now with the Catholic Church, that they have a new pope. And I feel a little uncomfortable putting words in Simone's mouth, but my sense is that she and many sisters and many people who are or used to be identify as Catholics feel like there's something has been being lost in the Catholic Church. And I think that's part of why the nuns on the bus were such a hit during that first bus tour, was because it was just like, a big sigh of relief for people who for decades have been kind of pent up and saddened by, and not just like nuns or priests or people in the church, but lay people that, to a lot of people that, I mean, the Catholic Church, it's in your bones, it's in your blood. It's like, it's your culture. And, but then all of a sudden your culture kind of like makes you go yuck. And so you want to distance yourself from it, but it's all, it's always in there under your skin. So yeah, I think she was to a lot of people like the only voice they were hearing, that was really trying to bring the church back to the church that they knew and loved.
Do you think people will have a different perspective about nuns and the Catholic Church after watching this film?
It's funny, because I think it was good that I didn't know anything about nuns when I first jumped in. Now that nuns are some of my best friends, all of a sudden, I'm like, I've lost my new perspective a little bit, but they're just people, you know, and they're just people who have picked a certain path and a certain way to spend their time.
And what do you want people to take away from the film?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because I didn't go into this project with a really clear sense of the story I was trying to tell, it was really my own personal journey and quest. I think I want to give people what I was looking for, which is I really just wanted to be a fly on her wall. I wanted a backstage pass to what it means to be a hero. And I want other people to have that too. And I think that we all could use a little more hero in our lives.
That's Melissa Reagan, director of the new documentary Nuns on the Bus, that follows the activism of Sister Simone Campbell. Find more information about it at KALW.org and click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Now we continue our series of conversations with people who want to be the next mayor of Oakland. We'll start today with Libby Schaff. Libby Schaff was born and raised in Oakland. She got into politics and worked with Ignacio de la Fuente and Jerry Brown before being elected to the city council, where she currently represents District 4. That includes Montclair and Redwood Heights. Now she's running for mayor. KALW's Ben Trefney sat down with Libby Schaff in our studios.
I'm wondering, if Occupy had come about under your watch as mayor, what would you have done?
I think that the disparity between rich and poor is offensive, and everyone has the right to be so angry about that. But that expression does not need to result in vandalism to property, to the breaking of laws, and to the harming of people. And drawing that clear line never happened. Similarly, the Oakland Police Department should be one of the best trained police departments in the country to deal with and facilitate peaceful protest. That type of policy, that leadership, that direction, and the training clearly had not been given to the Oakland Police Department. I mean, we are Oakland. We are always going to be a center of demonstration and protest and free speech. That's just who we are. And so as a city, we need to be prepared for that, have clear policies, and train all of our staff members in how to react appropriately.
So recognizing the value of free speech and the voice that was given to people who are really fed up with economic disparities, which you call offensive, how would you go about as mayor helping to channel that energy into something constructive for the city then?
I think you channel it constructively by creating opportunities for people to take action. I think that was part of the frustration was many of us have been working on these issues for our lifetimes. I mean, many of us came to politics because of a passion for these very issues. And so to be first excited that it felt like the rest of the community was waking up to this awareness that many of us have had for years, but then disappointment that that energy didn't seem to be channeled in a constructive direction, that became a disappointment. I mean, I'll just put out one example, Prop 13 reform. Let us all sit down and put energy into that split tax roll proposal.
You're saying about commercial property taxing versus personal property, like homes and such.
Absolutely. That's a piece of Prop 13 reform that many people have thought is obtainable. You know, Prop 13 has always been called the third rail of politics, but this is such a common sense reform. It is so morally obvious to many of us that this is something that's needed. Why not take this energy and put it into something like that? Raising the minimum wage. I'm so proud that Oakland is stepping forward and taking immediate and certain action. March 1st, minimum wage is going to be going up to $12.25 in Oakland. I am confident that that measure is going to pass on our ballot. That's the type of movement that this country needs to see. That is really powerful. That's what I hope people put their energy into.
That's Oakland Councilwoman Libby Schaff. She's running for mayor of Oakland. Next up, Jason Shake Anderson. Anderson is a veteran, a former Occupy media liaison, and the Green Party candidate for this election. He's an Oakland native who feels strongly about creating jobs for youth, investing in alternative currencies, and supporting the arts in his hometown. Anderson stopped by our studios and spoke with KLW's Nina Gensler-Debs.
Seems like a fairly major part of your campaign is Bitcoin and including the use of Bitcoin. I also just don't know very much about Bitcoin in general, but will you talk to me a little bit about Bitcoin and
okay, when I get this question, I like the question. I like because it's not about Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. It's about alternative currencies. Bitcoin is an alternative currency, crypto-based currency that is based upon a ledger that is on the web, that is open for anybody, which creates the lack of a third-party system. The banking system now we have is a third-party system that verifies that the money is there so we can exchange it amongst ourselves. It's a trust factor, right? With the internet in place, that replaces that third-party system of a Federal Reserve system with the internet and a ledger, which then now is just peer-to-peer, right? That's kind of essentially how Bitcoin works. It can't be complicated, but the simple version of it is alternative currencies. I want people to understand that we're in America. We say it's a free country. We need to be free with our commerce too, and we need to realize we're global citizens. Having one option of use of money or the most popular option isn't always the best, and sometimes we need to augment our currency with other currencies so that we can live a more prosperous life and understand money completely. If I only have one choice, then I only have one's form of understanding, but I have several choices and I understand how resources work and how commerce works and I become more of a global citizen. And what I would like to see all of us become a global citizen in the concept of we understand how the world works around us and we're not just consumers, but we're actually producers and we also know how to use different alternatives, especially when it comes to our money. So Oakland currency would be another one. That's something that the city of Oakland has passed that should be implemented shortly. And people educating themselves on economy and resources is something that I'm very interested in. So Bitcoin is kind of like it opens up the door for that conversation, and that's why I continue to promote Bitcoin, because it opens up the door for alternative resources, alternative currencies.
That was Oakland mayoral candidate Jason Shake Anderson. If you want to know more about these candidates, we have longer interviews with each of them online at kalw.org and click on Cross Currents. And tune in Mondays and Wednesdays this month. We're bringing you conversations with all the contenders who want to become Oakland's mayor. And tomorrow night, you can hear an hour-long special from KALW News, where we'll present interviews with all 14 candidates who are campaigning in the Oakland mayoral race. That's right here on KLW tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Tune in. It's the Joy. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Olivia Cueva, Lila Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hambrick, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Liz Mack, Marlo McKenzie, Ted Muldoon, Judy Silber, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Sandhya Dirks. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And you are a big part of our show, and we love to hear from you. So email us at news@kalw.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we are listener-supported public radio. Well, the San Francisco Giants are in the World Series, and this is their bluegrass fight song, performed by Hot Buttered Rum. They've got a gig coming up Friday night at Moe's Alley in Santa Cruz, starting right about the time that Game 3 between the Giants and Royals wraps up. Game 1 of the World Series is tomorrow night. Go Giants! For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. It's an even numbered year. So say hey, hey, by the SFA. Sit them banners down. It's bye, bye, baby. When the Giants are in town. When the Giants are in town. The Giants are in St. Louis after breaking the Nationals' hearts. 'Cause Matt Ball-